That's the opening music to probably the best-known opera by Carlisle Floyd. It's Susanna, and a performance here by the Opera Orchestra of Lyon, led by Kent Nagano, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. The show is your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly, and on today's program, we will be talking about performances coming up this weekend, specifically of Carlisle Floyd's most recent opera called Cold Sassy Tree, which is happening Saturday night at 7:30 at the auditorium at Clifton Central High School in Watseka, or near Watseka. It's
It's near Watseka, but it's in Clifton.
And, well, that's why it's called Clifton Central High School. And that was the voice of Helen Todd, who's the artistic director of Sugar Creek Symphony and Song, or Sugar Creek Opera Festival, which is presenting not only Cold Sassy Tree, but also on Sunday, An American Tapestry, Scenes from Opera, starring the Danis Wilsons, Apprentices, which includes some additional music by Carlisle Floyd and other American composers. And we have with us, as you heard, Helen Todd. We also have the stage director for Cold Sassy Tree, Jeffrey Buckman. Their pianist, Sheldon Miller, who will be featured throughout here, as we have some live singing by four members of the cast, if I counted right. Kyle Albertson in the role of Rucker Lattimore. Daniel Shirley as Will Tweedy, who is Rucker's grandson. Rochelle Bard in the role of Mary Willis. Julia Snowden as Loma Williams. And Helen Todd herself as Love Simpson. I guess that's five actors, isn't it? So thank you all very much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
It's an opera that I was able to hear very little of. It's sort of hard to find, at least if you mostly haunt iTunes. But if anybody wants to get some visuals, there are some things up on YouTube, I think, of things going on. In previous festivals, at least the ones that I've paid attention to, Helen, and that we've talked about, they've been operas that the average person who likes music and knows a little bit something about opera probably has heard of.
Yes.
And I'm going to guess with reasonable certainty that the average person who loves classical music and knows just a little bit about opera won't have heard of this one. I count myself among those people. Cold Sassy Tree, that just sounds interesting. Carlisle Floyd, oh, I know his name. Mostly from Susanna and probably Of Mice and Men, which are the two most frequently seen presented of his operas. So what made you decide to choose this one?
Well, I thought the story of Cold Sassy Tree was, it reminded me of my own childhood in Watseka in Iroquois County. And there were characters that I recognized that I could say, oh, well, that's Mr. Whitman down at the Ford dealership, or that's who I think Rucker Lattimore reminds me of. And so there were characters from my church, from the Methodist church, that I thought, oh, that's maybe that's Mary Willis and maybe that's Loma. And so when I first listened to it, I thought, being from Watseka, I really understand what the audience enjoys and what they would be ready to experience for a first time and how far to push them to try something new. So building on the festival over the past 10 years kind of set the framework to do this work now, because now I have their trust and their faith that I've educated them over time, because most of the audience in Iroquois County can't even get classical radio. So Champaign-Urbana is really fortunate because they can get classical radio, but Iroquois County cannot. So I felt like Cold Sassy Tree would be a great story that they would automatically connect to because of the story. And some people have actually read the book, that the novel of Cold Sassy Tree. And the music is very American, so when they hear it, they can actually connect to it immediately. There's no barrier for them. And it's got a through composition so that sometimes they're almost speaking the text, although it's sung all the way through. And I just thought that the audience would really, really love it.
Well, it sounds like a nice story. I have not read the book. I had not heard of the book either, although I talked to some people. So, oh, that's a book by Olivanne Burns, right? Is that her name? But I read the synopsis, and it sounds, frankly, it sounds really Southern. And Carlisle Floyd himself, a Southerner. As you will, in fact, hear later, we'll be having conversation with him, and it's very much in his accent. Before we talk a little bit more about the opera itself, because I want to get a real quick synopsis of the thing, let's back up slightly and talk about the festival. And because there are not only the events that I mentioned, there's a preview program, and then this opera, and then essentially the presentation by the apprentices. But there's some affiliated events happening around there.
Yes, there's a church tour, which actually ties very well with Cold Sassy Tree. It's a tour of historic churches in Iroquois County, and that is on Saturday morning at 9:30. You get on this bus and you can go see all this beautiful architecture in the county. There's a wine tasting in Gilman at Inside Out at 4 o'clock, so you could go to the wine tasting before you go to the opera. And then the American Scenes program, American Tapestry on Sunday, actually gives even more American opera, more opera in English, because we actually had the snafu that happened last summer, which was during Madame Butterfly, the surtitle screen went out because it overheated. Mm. And I'm standing on stage panicked, seeing out of the corner of my eye that the surtitle screen is out. And I'm like, oh, crap, I'm really going to hear this from every donor. Oh, this, I'm in big trouble now. And so they fix it in intermission, and then 5 minutes into it, it went out again. Mm. And the audience actually said, we liked it when the surtitle screen went out because we were more riveted by the drama. Mm. And that's the power of Madame Butterfly. And so I thought that was perfect to do Cold Sassy Tree in English with no surtitles, because our singers have impeccable diction. They don't need the surtitles. And I thought the audience would really just totally connect.
What's the story of Cold Sassy Tree? I'll let Jeffrey Buckman, who's the stage director, who has to know this story inside and out.
Well, I mean, it's an incredibly character-driven story. And it centers around a 59-year-old man whose wife has just passed away, and only 3 weeks later, he announces to his family that he's going to remarry, and this time he's marrying a woman who happens to be about half his age. And he says he's doing it out of need. He's doing it because he needs to be taken care of, and he's got a business arrangement with her. She's going to cook and clean and take care of him, and he, in return, is going to leave her. He's going to deed her the house and all its furniture. Well, first of all, the woman's already an outsider in the town, coming from Baltimore, and here's a nice southern town, so they all view her as a Yankee. Then the fact that she seems, in their eyes, to be a money-grubbing woman who's after him. He goes to her defense, as does his grandson, Will Tweedy, but his daughters and the rest of the town just think she's a Jezebel hunting him down for his money. The wonderful thing about Cold Sassy Tree is how, as we progress through the show, these layers of the onions of these two characters, Rucker Lattimore, the 59-year-old, and Love Simpson, this young woman who he's decided to marry, how they slowly throughout the show reveal the real motives behind what they're doing. It's not that Rucker Lattimore just needed somebody to take care of him. We find out that the minute she walked into his shop 2 years ago while his wife was still alive, he totally fell in love with her. He felt like he had no reason to live anymore, and he saw her and his world just lit up again. And we also find out from Love Simpson that the real reason she accepted his offer is not only because she grew up in boarding houses all her life and just dreams of having a home of her own, but she also was raped when she was a young child of 9 and has this burden of feeling like she's a damaged, scarred human being and really is looking for redemption. And there's a beautiful moment in the opera where Rucker talks about her purity and just how wonderfully clean she is in his eyes. And she is redeemed in that moment. It's absolutely gorgeous. So that's the big structure of the opera. There are incredible characters in this piece, some that we don't have with us today. Camp Williams, who is seen as the village idiot. He's slow, and everybody gives him a hard time, and he actually is part of the cause of Rucker ending up getting killed. And you see the destruction of this young man who only looked for someone to tell him good job about one thing in his life. And so after Rucker dies, you sense in the opera exactly what does happen in the novel, is that he's going to go off and kill himself out of guilt. You have incredible characters like Effie Bell Tate, who's the village know-it-all gossip. She's in everybody's business, and we've got an incredible singing actress for that role, Cindy Sadler. You're just going to adore her. So it's a taste of real life in small-town America. I mean, it is a southern town, but it's small-town America. And it deals with the divides in society between the haves and the have-nots, who will deal with some of that. In the first aria, you're going to hear from Will Tweedy, who's the grandson of Rucker Lattimore. He falls in love. He being a town person who's who grew up with wealth, he falls in love with somebody from the other side of the tracks, who in the story is from Milltown, the mill workers. And so we're dealing with differences in class structure and breaking those barriers down. We have differences, the barriers that we have to break down a little bit with race as well in the opera. So there's really wonderful themes going throughout the story.
Well, why don't we hear that the music you just referred to from the character of Will Tweedy?
Sure. Let me just set this up for you. So this is in the first act, and Will Tweedy is just kind of discovering this character, Lightfoot McClendon, who he goes to school with, and they're finding their first bond together, and she actually breaks up a fight. He was over there in Milltown looking for his dog, and some young mill boys beat him up, and she broke it up, and here he is thanking her for it, saying, "You're my guardian angel."
This is Daniel Shirley in the role of Will Tweedy from Carlisle Floyd's opera called Sassy Tree, which is going to be presented at the Sugar Creek Opera Festival on Saturday night at 7:30 at the Central High School in Clifton. At the piano here on Live and Local is Sheldon Miller.
Just like you'd been sent to me, sent to shield me, to protect me, keep me safe from hurt or harm. Guardian angels hover overhead, just out of sight. Then when you're in need of them, they appear and spread their wings, and the danger once so fearsome now just vanishes away. Just like you'd been sent to me, sent to shield me, to protect me, keep me safe from hurt or harm, keep me safe from hurt. That's what guardian angels do.
Daniel Shirley in the role of Will Tweedy from the opera called Sassy Tree by Carlisle Floyd, with Sheldon Miller at the piano here on Live and Local. Live in our studio on FM 90.9. You know, I almost decided to open our show today, not with the overture, as it were, to another Floyd opera, but with one of his songs, which he hasn't written a great deal of, and that almost sounded like it could have been a song. I mean, just taken out of, you know, just written by itself, yeah, and plunked into an opera.
If I may, I think a really neat aspect of the story is the parallel between Will's relationship with Lightfoot and Rucker's relationship with Miss Love.
Remind us, Lightfoot is?
Lightfoot is the young lady to whom I was just singing, my love interest, and in this aria, this is my first flirtatious moment with her. But my mother and my aunt, who are Rucker's two daughters, see my love interest, Lightfoot, as being beneath us from the wrong side of the tracks, an outsider. And that's exactly how they see Miss Love. So it's interesting how those two relationships develop kind of in parallel with each other over the course of the show.
Well, it sounds like pretty well intertwined.
Very much.
Plot. You know, I thought it would be interesting for you all to sort of experience with me what I was able to experience a few weeks ago, which was the opportunity to talk with the composer, Carlisle Floyd. It's not very often that one can talk with the composer of an opera because they're nearly all dead, usually by for a very long time. But Carlisle Floyd's been producing operas for many decades, and they're staples on the stage. Some of them, a couple of them in particular. And I heard he's even writing a new one, but I never did get to ask him about it. In any event, I really enjoyed the conversation. Thought our audience and you all might enjoy it as well. And then there'd be some things that we can perhaps react to later on. So I started asking him what made him decide to concentrate on opera at all, since he had begun life really as a pianist. You do, of course, have you're primarily an operatic composer, almost exclusively an operatic composer, with some exceptions. And I'm just curious, what made you decide to write operas, given especially that you really began musical life as a pianist?
Well, I've been asked that many times, and I had to finally try to come up with an answer that satisfied me. Because I was a pianist, and I also wrote, and I also, when I was a child, I did a lot of drawing. And the answer that has satisfied me most, and seems to be a reasonable explanation, is the fact that the opera is a way of combining all of those interests, especially drama and writing and music. And while I never considered myself a composer until my mid-20s, I think that's where I was headed all along. And the idea of doing my own librettos was part of it also. That certainly satisfied my interest in drama as well as in writing. So I think all of those things added up to opera. I know that I've never had any aspirations to be a purely symphonic or abstract music composer. This just never appealed to me. I seem to be a slave to texts.
What kind of writing did you do before writing opera libretti?
I was in a creative writing seminar when I was a senior in college, and then before that I had private lessons in writing with the English teacher at the college I was enrolled at, who saw me just as a private student as well as a member of her class. So that writing was never seemed that much of a stretch to me to extend that to libretto writing.
Did you tend to do fictional writing or non-fictional writing?
Fictional writing and also poetry.
So that would make, an especially good transition to libretti because, of course, there are always stories about people, and they're often quite poetic. Would you consider your libretti to be poetic, an extension of that part of you?
Well, yes, I think so. I mean, in terms of the expression of feeling, or just in terms of a turn of a phrase that pleases me, and I think it has a poetic quality. Of course, the main thing is to have credible dialogue in an opera. You need to avoid anything, certainly, that is highly philosophical or too high-flown, that it's not easily transported to the audience. But that's never been a really concern of mine, because I was always interested in intelligibility in opera.
I don't know the background of all of your operas, but certainly the one that we're going to talk a little bit about, Cold Sassy Tree, and also one of your best known and most often performed, Of Mice and Men, both based on novels or novellas. And I wonder, in those cases where you're taking somebody else's writing, and especially, I guess, in the case of John Steinbeck, who's an extremely well-known writer, how do you deal with their language versus your language when transitioning to libretto?
To tell you the truth, once I start doing the libretto, I don't refer back to the original. I was very surprised that an English professor friend of mine took it upon himself to find out how much of Steinbeck's actual dialogue or monologue I had used in Of Mice and Men, and he was surprised that I had done 70% of it myself, was mine. I would have thought it had been more, but that was his finding. And once I begin, as I said, once I begin doing the libretto, I no longer think of the source. I think of making it as much mine as possible. Otherwise, you get into trouble.
What sort of trouble?
One of the main things facing a librettist is compression. And you want to be just as brief and to the point as possible, because it just takes so much longer to sing things than to say them. And so that's one of the first obligations you have to confront, which is brevity. And that already means that you, and if you're adapting language, you have to certainly trim the language to the maximum. And so that's, I felt, has been my responsibility from the beginning. Just, it's a part of good libretto writing. Some composers have done it more successfully than others.
I heard an interview in which you were talking about Cold Sassy Tree, which is your most recent opera. Of course, Sugar Creek's going to be doing this opera. And you said that the book by Olivan Burns didn't seem like an obvious choice for an opera because it's... I haven't read the book, so I'm sort of taking your... description of it, that it occurs in vignettes, and so that made it a special challenge to turn it into an opera libretto.
It did, and it was something that I was slow to realize. I just knew that I was having some problems with it. But there's no through line, as we say in opera or plays, in the story, and the one chapter doesn't necessarily dovetail into the next. And it finally occurred to me that the problem was the fact that I think that the chapters are almost, in some cases, isolated from each other, certainly in terms of action, not certainly in terms of characters. But it took me a great deal of puzzling and reading the book about three times to try to find something in the book that I could use as a through line, which is, of course, the first thing I look for in terms of a play or a libretto writing. And once I discovered that, or I won't say discovered it, but I just took elements of the story, which seemed to be strong elements, and made a through line out of it so that it becomes a love story of two people, a very improbable one, certainly. But nonetheless, it's a story of a relationship that begins... on one emotional footing and transfers certainly into another. And so I think the final result satisfied me, but it certainly cost me a great deal of grief in the process.
I think in that same interview with you, you had made reference when you were first getting started as an operatic composer in the 40s to having the choice of going into three compositional camps, either the way of Arnold Schoenberg and 12-tone music, the way of Hindemith and Stravinsky, which could be different sorts of things, or generally American, and you chose that latter. And I wondered, first, why did you choose the latter, and what is an American opera as you've understood it, as you've created it?
Well, I think an American opera is essentially opera that's on American theme, or has an American theme, or is American setting, and deals with... particularly American subjects, or things that are peculiarly American. And certainly the South abounds in that, and other parts of the country do as well. But I didn't start out consciously to write an American opera. Well, I think I did, too. Yes, I think I did. Because it was a period in which we were very much concerned with the increase in importance of drama to opera in the 1950s and 60s. And also to make opera that was more palatable to the average American audience. And so I think, obviously, to do that, you use material that is familiar. And it was a time in which European composers were writing operas on American themes, and I thought if they could do it, I should certainly be able to do it as well, if not better, since I was certainly, that was my background and habitat.
You're talking about writing about what you know, and I wonder about the musical materials and how you've gone about musically expressing an American subject, and also how those musical materials relate to the music you grew up with in South Carolina.
In Susanna, that's pretty obvious. To a lesser extent, of course, than Of Mice and Men, so that I never set out to write music that set a locale like I did with Susanna. Susanna, the use of folk materials, which are all mine, by the way, are used simply to set the feeling of the locale, which, of course, is the Tennessee Mountains. And nothing sets a locale as fast as music does, or certainly any faster. So with Susanna, I just use those elements right from the very beginning. It opens with a square dance theme, so you know pretty soon where you are. I don't think that's always the way. So it comes down to what is an American composer, and I think it really is more than anything else an American, American who writes music.
And then what about the present opera, Cold Sassy Tree? I've only been able to hear, you know, some recorded excerpts of here and there.
Well, that has some strong American elements in it. There's a version of a hymn. It has some folk elements, strong folk elements, but that's by no means the majority, I don't think, of the material. And it's always there to suggest color.
The title is curious. Is it ever clear in the novel where she came up with Cold Sassy as the name of a town?
Yeah, that's set up in the opera right off of the bat. Cold Sassy Tree. The lore connected with it was that it was a grove of sassafras trees, and they froze in a very severe winter. And some people who were coming south at that time, I think during the Civil War period, expecting something in North Georgia other than freezing weather, and I think they dubbed the title Cold Sassy Tree, and it stuck. It's now called Commerce, Georgia.
So it's based on an actual place.
Yes.
The story of the name of the town already sounds like kind of a funny one, and this has been described as at least something of a comic opera, even though the story doesn't seem particularly funny, so to speak. And you've commented yourself that trying to use humor in opera was something new to you and especially challenging. What makes it a challenge, and what's humorous about this opera?
The humor comes very much in the opera, in some of the language, some of the dialogue, and also some of the situations are very comical, such as the arrival of Love Simpson's former fiance, who comes from Texas to propose to her again. It's a very comical scene and touching. But I was very hard put when I completed the opera what to call it, and I think I finally decided just to call it a comedy drama in music, because it has both of those elements equally strong. And as happens so often in life, I mean, things change very radically from something very lively and merry to something very sad and tragic, or very serious, at the least. Which is what happens in incidents in Cold Sassy Tree, when they're high-spirited one moment and very serious and tense at the next. And that threw me at first because I thought, how do you set that? Well, you set it simply by setting it honestly and going with the prevailing emotion in each scene.
And where does your personal story of your upbringing, your background, fit into this one, if at all?
Cold Sassy Tree seemed very, very comfortable to me and very familiar because, of course, it so largely was concerned with people and rural America at a time that I grew up in South Carolina. So that was one of the things that I think that attracted me to the material, because I felt it was honest and it was not exaggerated. And it's something that I worry about any time the opera is ever produced, that it will be exaggerated and caricatured rather than played very straight. I've had the same problem with Susanna and the revival meeting in Susanna, because it should be done very, very straight. It's a very solemn scene and a very frightening scene in its way. And to be played for laughs, it may make the audience more comfortable to be able to laugh at it, but the point is it also distances them from the dramatic situation on the stage. In Cold Sassy Tree, I'm especially conscious of that, because it's not the Beverly Hillbillies.
And have you had a chance to work with the stage director of the production in Sugar Creek to make sure you're comfortable with how they're presenting it?
No, because I won't be able to get up to see it. But believe me, if I did, that would be the first thing I would be looking for. That would be the first thing I would urge on the director, that nothing be exaggerated beyond what's in the script.
That's composer Carlisle Floyd, who wrote the opera Cold Sassy Tree, which will be presented at the Sugar Creek Opera Festival, which is based in Watseka. The performance will be in Clifton at Central High School this Saturday night at 7:30. The festival actually begins with some things going on tomorrow at the Watseka Library. You can get more information by going to sugarcreekfestival.org. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. And we have with us in the studio not only several members of the cast, one of whom is the artistic director, but also the stage director, who's Jeffrey Buckman. And so I'm curious, would he be pleased, do you think, to see what you've done?
You know, I hope and I think that we'll do Carlisle Floyd very proud. From day one, I tried to instill in the cast that we go for honesty, that the path for their emotional growth is one through honesty. And most of the work that I do, these are all people who bring a lot to the table. I don't really have to feed them much. All I really have to do is temper the path a little bit and make sure that we're doing exactly what Carlisle said, which is to never become caricatures of this character that we're creating. And not only the first time we do it, to do it in an organic, honest way, but we in opera have to repeat things over and over to get them just right and make sure in all the repetitions that we're never allowing ourselves to become caricatures. So whether it's the comedy or the drama, we're always playing it through moments of honesty. And, you know, to touch on something else that Carlisle said, I think he sets things up beautifully in the balance between comedy and drama. You know, one of the highest tense moments of the opera is when Rucker gets shot. And it's set up beforehand by a wonderfully charming scene. I wouldn't call it comic per se, but incredibly charming. And there's nothing like getting an audience gently kind of laughing along with a moment and then hitting them really hard with something very powerful. And I think he does it beautifully.
So as in life, there's ups and downs, sometimes to extremes.
Absolutely.
I think you all brought in a scene, an extended scene, which maybe will give people an idea of some of this the juxtapositions here.
Sure. This scene is when Rucker Lattimore announces to his family, to his two daughters and his grandson, that he's decided to remarry, and it's going to be Miss Love Simpson from Baltimore. And we get to hear their reactions to his announcement.
And we have in the role of Rucker Lattimore, Kyle Albertson. We heard earlier, as Will Tweedy, Daniel Shirley, and we're now going to hear also, for the first time, as Mary Willis, Rochelle Bard, and his Loma Williams Julius Snowden. At the piano is Sheldon Miller from Cold Sassy Tree by Carlisle Floyd here on FM 90.9.
Will Tweedy, Will Tweedy. Tell your mama I wanna talk to her, then go fetch her and Loma.
They're both inside.
Then go get 'em and make haste, son. Will Tweedy? Ain't you done with that fool scribbling yet? There's more important things for you to think about.
Like what?
Like making a living when you're done with school.
Like seeing to your farms or taking over at the store.
Well, at least you wouldn't go hungry. But go on now. I ain't got time to stand here and argue with you. You can do your writing when you're done with your real work. Same as a woman does her fancy work. After all the cooking and cleaning is done.
What on earth's the matter? And why are you here at this time of day?
Now there's something I come here to say, so listen close, 'cause I ain't gonna say it but once. Now you know how much I thought of you, Ma. For 35 years she was my all in all, so you know I won't never forget her. Now don't go to crying before I'm finished. You can cry all you want to once I'm gone. With your ma gone, I'm gonna need looking after. And I ain't gonna let you take care of me. So I finally decided what I'm going to do. And that's what I come to tell you. I'm gonna get married again.
What?
A name only marriage is what I mean. A business arrangement, you might say, to keep house, cook, and wash clothes.
Of all the crazy foreign notions of yours,
what woman would agree to such a thing?
You're not born yet.
Miss Love Simpson, that's who?
Miss Love Simpson! Miss Love Simpson!
I done asked her and she said yes.
But she could be your daughter.
She can't be a day over 33.
Well, maybe 35, but she's still young enough to be your daughter.
She can be 15 or 50. It don't matter, as long as I get took care of.
Miss Love Simpson, Papa!
She works for you. She's your employee, for goodness sake.
And the milliner seamstress beyond compare, but I ain't getting married to have so and done.
Then find a good colored woman.
That way there'd be no talk.
But don't you see, don't you understand? A wife's cheaper.
And what can Miss Love Simpson expect from your arrangement?
It's a fair offer, which she has accepted.
How fair?
Don't worry, there's plenty left for y'all.
Papa, tell us what you mean by fair.
She'll get my house and my furniture, but that's everything I'll need to her.
The furniture. Maybe there's something else.
Like what?
Like what, son?
Maybe Grandpa's lonesome.
Well, the house does get awful empty.
It's just too soon, Papa. It's just not decent.
With Mama buried just 3 weeks ago.
If waiting would bring her back, then I'd be for waiting. But it won't.
But out of respect, sir, out of common respect.
My respect for your ma will go with me to my grave.
Wait, surely you can wait.
For what? For what? I'd like to know. She's as dead now as she'll ever be. Well, ain't she? Well, ain't she? Stop that crying now. You can cry when I'm gone. I'm marrying Miss Love, so I'm done now with what I come to say. Except for one thing, I expect y'all to be nice to her. And talks real refined.
That's put on stuck-up talk, Will, the way all Yankees sound.
But Baltimore ain't really up north, and that's where Miss Love says she's from.
But son, we don't know a thing about her background. I'll bet her pa can't read or write, and her mama probably dips snuff. Hush up, Loma, that's going too far.
Well, I'd be proud to have a new grandma as stylish and pretty as Miss Love.
Then take off that armband if you feel that way. You're an insult to your grandma's memory.
Don't touch it. I loved grandma as much as you.
Stop! This is all too much for my nose. Run, Will, and bring me my smelling salts. Feel the spell coming on.
We'll lose standing in cold, sassy tree.
I know, it's bound to happen.
And the name of Lattimore won't mean the same.
Won't ever mean the same.
How can we hold our heads
we
up?
Can't.
How can we look this town in the eye?
We can't. So we must stop him. How, Loma? How can we stop him?
How do you stop a runaway train or a bull that stormed through your fence?
You can't!
Short of ether or chloroform, there's not a blessed thing we can do!
The shame!
The shame!
The shame!
The shame!
Pure disgrace of it all!
The shame!
The shame!
The shame!
The shame!
The shame and pure disgrace of it all!
Wow. That was a scene from the opera Cold Sassy Tree by Carlisle Floyd. which is being presented by the Sugar Creek Opera Festival, which is based in Watseka. The performance will be at Clifton Central High School on Saturday at 7:30, and we heard four members of that cast at the end and for most of that scene, as Mary Willis, Rochelle Bard, and as Loma Williams, Julia Snowden. And then sort of popping in and out was Daniel Shirley in the role of Will Tweedy, and towards the beginning informing them of his marriage. Rucker Lattimore, played by Kyle Albertson, and at the keyboard, with a pretty massive undertaking in that reduction of what sounded like an awfully difficult orchestral part, which
it
I assume makes it
to play, yeah.
I assume makes it even harder on the piano.
It is. I think Susanna, he may have written on the piano, and this one I feel like he might have written orchestrally, like for the orchestra. And since he's a brilliant pianist, you know, it makes sense for him to write at the keyboard. But for this kind of score, it's so wide, meaning there are so many notes, like the pages are all black, so you kind of have to pick and choose what to play. And, you know, it's difficult to remain focused. On some operas, you're able to kind of enjoy, you know, like the staging, you can enjoy the jokes, you can kind of enjoy the singers. And with this opera, it's Joe Mekovich, the conductor. He's kind of like my only focus, just to make sure that we stay together and that, you know, that these entrances, these cues, like oboe cues and violin cues and everything, are on time so the singers feel confident. Because if we're off, it's really easy to fall off track.
I could imagine just from listening to that.
That's bottom line, Sheldon's the man.
Oh, thanks, man.
And that's Sheldon Miller, who's the pianist. And you're hearing him live here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, where our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309. As I was listening to that, I was sort of, in my mind, trying to remove the music. And it sounded to me like if you just wrote down, if you just read his libretto, you'd have a play, which cannot be said, I would be willing to bet, for the vast majority of opera libretti.
Absolutely.
And I wonder if that makes it a whole lot easier to make this a convincing production.
Well, you know, I think we're always thinking text as much as we can, whether it's Puccini or something like Floyd. But the way that the music informs in Floyd is absolutely together in the moment. And you're absolutely right. You can pull the text away, you'll get the color and all of that, and when you put that back together with the orchestra, it's instantly clear whether he's trying to give you inner reflections of the character, or spontaneous moments, or kind of looking forward to something else. It's really crystal clear, and it does feel like a play. It very much feels like directing a play.
In scenes like the one we just did, the vocal lines are written in a way that it is very conversational. It's kind of the way Wagner wrote his operas, is that the voice was just another part, layer of the orchestra, just another part. If you take the vocal line by itself, it sounds very adjunct and wrong. But if you put it with the orchestra, it all of a sudden makes sense in a conversational flow sort of the way.
Although I would hardly call Wagnerian operas conversational.
I don't know if I'd call it conversational. I just was trying to make the comparison to the vocal writing being, you know, another aspect of the orchestra.
Fitting in with the orchestra.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's Kyle Albertson, who plays Rucker Lattimore. For as actors, for any of you really, any particular challenges to this opera, aside from what sounded to me to be an astounding challenge to find your pitches out of what's going on in the orchestra?
Well, I'm not 59 years old, so...
By which you mean you're younger than that.
I'm younger than that, yeah.
People can't tell on radio.
Yes, I'm 35 years old, so it's a little bit different for me to be playing a grandfather. I'm not even married, and I don't have kids. So be playing a grandfather and you know, playing a person whose wife has already passed away and you're, you know, madly in love with someone else, it's a big stretch for me acting-wise, and been a great help having Jeffrey here, especially for me, help me through all these scenes and find the honesty in them, as Carlo Floyd was talking about, and making it an honest performance, not a caricature at all.
And Jeffrey is Jeffrey Buckman, who's stage director, who we heard just a bit ago.
And I can vouch for, it may have been a stretch for Kyle, but that was not obvious to anyone else in the cast.
Right.
Because he really embodies Rucker. I know for me to do love, I tend to, you know, I'm usually, when I'm singing, I'm killing someone, I'm going insane, or I'm dying of TB. So to be a reserved Yankee from Baltimore was a stretch for me, too. And Jeffrey just, my husband had been watching rehearsals, and he said, the changes that you made from day one to now is a huge evolution of a character. And so that's all due to Jeffrey.
I'm curious, since you, and that's Helen Todd, who plays Love Simpson, is also the general and artistic director for a Sugar Creek Opera Festival, a Sugar Creek Symphony and Song. Similar question. Do you have a similar observation for yourself playing this role? I mean, I'm not going to presume how old anybody is in this room, but, you know, he doesn't look twice your age. Let's put it that way.
Well, that's why you have makeup.
Yeah.
And wigs. Mm-hmm. When I saw Kyle in audition in New York City, he walked into the room and he sang Tales of Hoffman, and then he sang Blitch from Susanna, I believe. And he looked young to me, and when I don't sing every year at Sugar Creek, but I was singing this year, so I thought, okay, how much can I change his physical face to make him look older than me so that the age isn't an issue? But really, it was the way that he carried himself. He carries himself in audition and also in rehearsal when he's being Rucker Lattimore with this unassuming power that is quite rare. When you see somebody sing in audition, I can read if they're nervous or if they're not nervous or if how well they know the aria or is this a new aria. But he walked into the room with power as a singer, but not arrogance. And that's unusual. And that's what Rucker does in the show. And so I said, well, I have to hear the other, you know, five baritones that are in their suits out in the hallway, but pretty much they're wasting their time because Kyle pretty much had locked it in.
Well, let's hear Kyle Albertson as Rucker Lattimore. I think we have something from which part of the opera?
This is also from Act One. And after Love Simpson and Rucker Lattimore have been married, Rucker sends his grandson, Will Tweedy, off with Love Simpson to go to church. And they go into church, and the town doesn't receive them very warmly. So she comes back home a bit distraught, and Rucker tries to cheer her up. He says, we're going to have church right here at home then. And this is a very insightful, tender moment of Rucker's, where he reveals that he's more than the gruff, difficult man that people have seen him to be.
To see the world and all the beauties in it, like the sun coming up, or butterflies, so don't mock me by being blind. So that you can hear all the sweet sounds on this earth, like the laughter of children or a fiddle tune. So don't mock me by being deaf. Most of all, I've given you a heart that's as wide as the sky, that can fill with joy or with pain. So don't mock me with an empty heart, 'cause that says you missed out on a life that you've scorned what you
be heartbroken to turn loose of this world, but I'll still be grateful to him that in his wisdom, his infinite wisdom, he put me here.
Some beautiful music from the opera Cold Sassy Tree by Carlisle Floyd. And that's in the role of the main character. There are wonderful characters throughout. Rucker Lattimore, Kyle Albertson singing with the pianist Sheldon Miller. All of the folks who've been on the show today are participating in creating this opera for the Sugar Creek Symphony and Song Festival, Sugar Creek Opera Festival, which is happening in Clifton, Illinois. The performance happening in Clifton on Saturday at 7:30. There are events leading up to that. And then on Sunday, there is an American Tapestry Scenes from Opera starring the singers from the Apprentice program for the Sugar Creek Festival. That'll be at Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, which includes some scenes from a couple of other operas by Carlisle Floyd, which we mentioned earlier is Susanna, as well as Of Mice and Men. Also from Vanessa by Samuel Barber, Street Scene by Kurt Weill, The Consul by Giancarlo Menotti, and here's one I hadn't heard of, Grapes of Wrath by Ricky Ian Gordon. Helen Todd is the general and artistic director, stars as Love Simpson. Daniel Shirley is Will Tweedy. Rochelle Bard is Mary Willis. Julia Snowden, Loma Williams, and the stage director is Jeffrey Buckman. We have been very, very privileged to have all of you on the show today, and thanks very much for coming up.
Thank you for having us.
I'm sure it'll all turn into a wonderful production. If you want more information, you can go to sugarcreekfestival.org. And if you want tickets, you can call 815-432-3830. And I'm sure you can get that number again if you go to the website. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. We have support today from the Decatur Celebration, August 2nd through 4th in downtown Decatur. Live musical acts include Here Come the Mummies, 70s rock band Foghat, American Idol finalist Casey Abrams, and many more. Events include a karaoke competition, Razzle Dazzle Good Times Parade, and a hot dog eating contest. Details are at DecaturCelebration.com. You're listening to 90.9 WYNL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR, classical music, and more for Central Illinois. WYNL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.